welcome. We're going to have my guest coming here in just a moment. But for those who don't know who he is, we're talking about Johan Orton, who is a sports photographer based in South Africa, who's covered so many different things. Focuses primarily on rugby, but covers quite a bit. And he was at the Rugby World Cup in 2019. He's covered Super Rugby, Currie Cup. He's also done other sports and other sporting events. So the list is crazy. He's done a lot of stuff, been involved. He's a professional sports photographer. Works with Canon cameras, so we'll talk a little bit about that. 18 years experience. Was at the Rugby World Cup. Also, he's a freelance photographer for Rugby 365. And he did the world record attendance for a tennis match. He covered that with Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal in Cape Town. Pretty awesome stuff there. And he's done over 300 photos published in national and international newspapers and magazines. Thing about photojournalists, folks, is you often don't know who they are because they're behind the camera and you see the iconic, amazing images that they produce that get published that add flavor and value to news stories and magazines. But he's done 4 Currie Cup finals, a Super Rugby final, and the Rugby World Cup final. I envy him because he got to go to the final in Japan. I was back from that and didn't go to the final. Okay, Johan, hoe gaan dit?
Het gaan baie goed, dankie, Chris. Goes very well, thank yourself.
Excellent. Well, welcome into the stream. I'm really happy to have you here. So for people who don't know, Johan and I know each other. We met through LinkedIn, and we talked for a mutual love of rugby. I don't know if it surprised him my interest in rugby. When he looked on LinkedIn, he saw an American following rugby. I'll give him a chance to talk about that in a moment. But I asked him if he was going to the Rugby World Cup in Japan. He says, yeah, that's the plan. I'm working on it now, trying to sort the funding and stuff out, and I plan on going. And then eventually he told me he was going. I'm like, well, we have to link up. And he said we have to link up. So we made a plan. And you know, it's crazy at the World Cup. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of time schedules you got to get from here to there. And it's difficult to get into some of the places. But we did link up in Toyota City a couple of times. So with that, Johan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And then we'll talk about that, how we got to meet.
Yes, thanks, Chris. Thanks for the opportunity. You must excuse my South African Burkey English, but I'll do my utmost best. I grew up with photography. My dad was a photographer, also just a freelance photographer, doing it as a hobby. And on grade 4, he bought me my first Pentax K1000 35mm camera. And the buck bitten me, and eventually I grew up with it. But it was just, it was just a hobby, and I focused on landscapes and stuff. And then I went to varsity, studied marketing management. In 2011, I worked at Ride Magazine. It's a cycling magazine in South Africa. And I've done the marketing and events for them. And during the APSA Cape Epic, one of our photographers for the magazine, they had something, something came up and they couldn't attend the event, the mountain bike event. And we hadn't had a choice. My camera is always with me. And I told the editor, listen, I'm willing to take the photos. And he said, can you? I said, yes, I can. I grew up with photography. And eventually, that was part of my job. I had a couple of front pages afterwards. And I've met with, at that stage, the APSA was also sponsoring the Springboks. Mm-hmm. And I've met the marketing manager of APSA. And she got me into the rugby. In the rugby scene, and like you know, all South African kids, they just want to wear the green and gold, and all, especially Afrikaans people, they're so passionate about rugby, and it was a dream come true. And since 2012, I was an official accredited media photographer for the Springboks, not for the Springboks, but for ASICS. One of the sponsors of the Springboks. And I've done a couple of front pages and all the tests in South Africa. So Japan was really a dream because I'm doing photography as a freelancer. So I've got a full-time marketing job in Nelspruit. Eventually I want to do it full-time. And get into Getty Images and Gallo Images and Reuters and stuff, agencies like that. But yeah, like I said, we've Chris and I met on LinkedIn, and the plan was to go to the Rugby World Cup in Japan. But first, I had to get some sponsors, and it was really a organizing nightmare. I got accredited, and eventually I got into the Rugby World Cup, and I've covered 5 group matches and the 3rd and 4th bronze medal match, and of course the final on the 2nd of November. Yeah.
So speaking of that, getting accredited and such, is that a bit of a challenge when it comes to these professional sports? I mean, or is it easier in South Africa with Currie Cup and Super Rugby? Or I imagine World Cup is really, I mean, that's one where they're not going to just let anybody show up. Because, I mean, I'm technically a journalist. I've written for media, and I considered asking for accreditation for the World Cup, but I just didn't get around to it. Maybe I should have. It would have got some better access.
Yeah, it's, to tell you the truth, it's not easy to get in. Like any profession, you need to climb the steps. They only accredited world known accredited media agencies, and luckily I met with Wessel Oosthuizen. Wessel Oosthuizen is one of the world's most famous rugby photographers. He covered the Springboks since I think 1964.
Wow.
And he took that famous Frick de Pria tackle on Chris Laidlaw in the against New Zealand. I think it was 76 or so. Anyway, he was known especially for that photo. And when Wessel told me, listen, he's got a media agency called SASPA, South African Sport Photography Agency, and he's willing to take me with. I must just do my own, get my own funds and stuff from sponsors. And if it wasn't for Uncle Wessel, in South Africa we call Uncle Wim. So yeah, that's why I said Wim.
Yep.
Wim Wessel. Then it wouldn't have been possible. But I had favor from God, and he blessed me with one of the best experiences of my life. I will never forget. It will go to the grave with me. Yeah.
No, it was pretty amazing stuff. Okay, so now we know why photography. You grew up with it. Your dad got you a camera, Pentax, you got started.
Yes.
But I guess I was mistaken, Johan. I thought that it was a full-time gig for you. I didn't realize that you did this as a freelance side thing and you actually have a day job. So is it difficult to find balance between going to events and covering these things and also doing your day job, make sure you have income coming in for the family?
Yeah, as I said, my day job is Monday to Friday. So I can work through on weekends, go to Joburg, Cape Town, Bloemfontein, Natal, and obviously in Nelspruit as well. We host the local provincial side called the Pumas, Mpumalanga Pumas.
Yeah, I know.
So we've also got a stay. And it's because of COVID-19, I missed the All Blacks first All Blacks test ever to be played in Nelspruit this year. So you have to have a balance, but luckily my work, my employees or employers supports me all the way. And I've got the opportunity to do both.
Well, that's the unfortunate side of what's happened. But assuming that this political hysteria is over by next year, we do have the British and Irish Lions coming, and they are scheduled to play in Nelspruit, are they not?
Yes. Yeah, the British Lions will face the South African A side, which means actually the B team. And that will take place, I think, on the 28th of July. Yeah. Next year.
So do you plan
and
on
so far so good.
Do you plan on covering that game?
Yes. And I will do all 3 tests as well.
Excellent. Brilliant. Now the other question is, it looks like, I'm not going to hold my breath, but it looks like we will see a resumption of Currie Cup maybe in mid-September to late September. Are you geared up for that, and are you planning on covering that?
Yeah, that's a plan. We haven't got a final resolution for what's going to happen. At the moment, there's talks of they're going to have an event in Nelspruit, maybe in Nelspruit for the whole Currie Cup. So all the teams will come here and they stay here. All the matches will take place here. Or it's between Nelspruit and Bombela and Cape Town. So, but there's still lots of negotiation with sponsors and so on. It's not, so we're not sure what's going to happen. But I'm covered for that, yeah.
Gotcha. No, it's...
Since March, I haven't...
Go ahead.
Sorry, Chris. The last sport event I covered was the Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal world record tennis match in Cape Town. And no one could imagine what will happen after that match, because since March, there's nothing going on. And, it had a huge impact on my income as well.
Well, what was that like? I mean, that was kind of a big deal. That was really promoted as a massive event. And what was kind of historic being there with so many people? I don't even know what the attendance was. If you remember what that was, tell us what the attendance was and what the experience was like being there in that event. Because it's kind of historic, yes?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Rafa and Federer, if you look at the Grand Slams they won between them, I think it's 38. And the previous record was 15 by Pete Sampras, the American. Mm-hmm. So, and after Pete Sampras, no one thought, is this record ever going to be broken? And, Federer did it, and it looks like Rafa and maybe Djokovic will surpass him. But, South Africans, we don't see Grand Slams in our country. So it was quite an amazing match to shoot, to see those kind of stars in South Africa. We only used to rugby stars and cricket stars and athletics and so, but we never, I couldn't imagine Federer and Nadal playing in our own country on our backyard. And what made it more special, both of them signed one of the match balls.
Oh, wow.
They gave to me. So, and I've done a huge action photograph of Rafael Nadal that was published in the Bild with those signature balls and my photography bib. And it's hanging close at my office. Yeah.
Cool. That's so that kind of leads me to the next question of the things you've covered. I think I know what the answer is, but let's ask it anyway. Of these events you've covered, what's the most memorable sporting event that you covered of your career thus far?
Definitely the Rugby World Cup. And I don't think anything will take its place. 2 November 2019 was the most... Well, I must be careful to say the most special day of my life, because my wife is sitting there. So my wedding was my most
nice,
special day. And
nice
after that,
save.
The Rugby World Cup, yes. Even the British and Irish Lions next year, it will never come to the Rugby World Cup final. Because of the Springboks winning it, it was my first World Cup final. And I'm planning to do the Olympics in the near future. But even that, I don't think it will come near to the Rugby World Cup, yeah.
So are you accredited for the Olympics that have moved from this summer to 2021? Or will you be going to Japan then?
Yes, I was accredited. But I'm not, at the moment, I'm not planning to go anymore. No.
Oh, you're not planning to go anymore. Okay. Well, that's a shame. It was... You were there in Japan. The thing about the Rugby World Cup, comparing it to the Olympics is amazing. I went to the Olympics in London in 2012, and it was one of the most amazing experiences. But I must say that The difference with the Olympics and the rugby is that with rugby, you travel the country. You go to different venues, you go to different cities, you learn about the country, you see a lot more. And it's spaced out. Whereas the Olympics, something's happening every minute of every day, all day long, every day. You're missing when you're seeing something, you're missing something else throughout most of the Olympics. And if you go to the Olympics, you're pretty much going to see Tokyo, which is interesting. But I think we got a better deal because we
only one city. Yeah,
we got to go all over the place. Toyota City, where you and I linked up. Isn't that an amazing stadium?
Absolutely amazing. My brother is an architect and I just showed some photos and video images of that stadium, and he couldn't believe the infrastructure and it's absolutely amazing stadium. The whole design of sort of looked like a rugby ball.
Yeah, it was kind of strange, but it's weird how it kind of arcs up and it just seems to get higher and higher towards the center as the seats get more seats in the middle going up. Interesting. I sat the two games I was there, I sat on the end both times, but on opposite ends. And the one time I was pretty good seats, and the next time I was like the next to last row at the top. That was for the Namibia and the Springboks game, which was good. But I was way up at the top. So that was pretty interesting. Pretty interesting arena. But which other stadium? Okay, let me, before I get to that, the final. Let me ask about the final. Where were you at on the pitch? Were you in the back of the try zone, or were you on the sidelines, or where were you?
No, we were only 70 photographers worldwide accredited, and there was 10 guys. They call them. They've got the roaming BIPs. Mm-hmm. They've got the golden BIPs. So five on each side, and the rest of the 15 or 25 on each side. So I was at the goal end, but you. It's interesting, Chris. Just before the match, you draw a lottery ticket, mm-hmm. and I drew 007 James Bond, and I thought, yes, I just know this is going to be a great spot anyway, and you have to stay with that spot the whole game, except if you can change with a New Zealand media man or England media, media photographer at halftime, because obviously they want to cover their team and I want to cover the Springboks, and I had that arrangement with one of those media photographers there as well, but you have to stand in line where you were supposed to be. So yeah,
gotcha. That's I was curious about how that worked, because I saw you at the Wales game. It was Wales Georgia, I think, I'm trying to remember, at Toyota City.
Yes, Wales Georgia.
When I was trying to link up with you, you were down on the field and we couldn't get very close because I was so high up in the air, and I'm like, hey, Johan. But you were at the end of the pitch for that game, and
I just remember Johan. Yeah,
there was so much noise and everything because it was quite a great atmosphere. Japan really did, I think, an amazing job hosting the World Cup. They should get a lot of credit for that.
Absolutely amazing World Cup. The nature part of I think the flats in between the group games or the what do you call it?
Oh, the typhoon. Typhoon Hagibis.
Typhoon. They couldn't help for that, but I was at the 1995 World Cup. All right, that's 25 years ago, but you can't really you can't
you can't compare the two.
Because of the technology and stuff, but. Japan, the people, they even learned all the nations, national anthems.
Yep.
They did they put so many effort in the whole World Cup, and they made us feel so welcome. I remember when Wessel and I, the first day we arrived in Tokyo, we just knew our hotel, we're close to this train station, and but there's six different exits, and we couldn't speak Japanese, and the people there, English, I think, is a bit worse than mine.
Indeed it is. That's a myth about Japan. People say Japan, they speak English. No, they don't. Only a small number of them speak English, even in Tokyo.
Yeah. Exactly. And then we decided, okay, we're going to stop people now to ask us to direct us to our hotel. And there was this old couple, they coming towards us, and we said, listen, we want to go to this hotel. And they looked, they understood us, but they couldn't communicate. And they looked on, they had a little GPS system, and they walked 1.6 kilometers, about 1 mile, with us to our hotel, and just to get us safe to our hotel. And it was absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe the generosity and the friendliness of the people. And it was not like just them. All the Japanese people were friendly and trying to help us. And I don't know if we just because we're South African, because everyone likes South Africans. No, I'm just joking. But they. They really helped us a lot, and the whole hosting committee, the LAOC of the Japan Rugby World Cup was absolutely amazing. They hats off to them.
No, it was. There's a couple things about Japan I learned, though, that I thought I knew, but it turns out were kind of not entirely accurate. The Japanese know English. No, they don't. Some do, but far fewer than in most countries I've been to. So it was a challenge at times with Japanese and English, with some folks trying to describe things. But they were very patient. They were always helpful. They went out of their way. I was in a little village when I went to Shizuoka for a game, and the hotel was nowhere near the stadium, and I was miles away, and there's no public transport. I took a bus. I got off a train, took a bus, standing on the side of a highway, looking around. There's nothing there. It's just a bus stop on a highway, and I'm looking at a schedule, trying to make sense of the schedule in Japanese, and like, huh? And then finally I figured out, and then the bus shows up, and I said to the guy, is this the bus that goes this way? He goes, oh yeah, you're about the right bus. So I get on the bus, get to this other hotel, but I have to walk probably about 2 kilometers from the bus stop to the hotel, get there all sweaty because it was so humid, go in, check in the hotel, and then there's no way to the stadium because you have to get to another train station, and the train station, so I had to hop in a taxi, which cost me most of my cash. But the next day when I left, I'm trying to find which bus stop, because the bus stop I got off of isn't the one that I need to get on to catch the correct bus to get out of there to get to the next. Anyway, it was such a headache, but this lady came out of this house, and she said, she was trying to ask me what I was looking for, and she didn't speak English, and we kind of mimed through it, and I was pointing and showing, and she walked with me about 800 meters to take me to to another hotel, which was under the underpass.
Exactly.
And that person there spoke enough English to say, yes, your bus stop is down here. It was really fantastic. They were wonderful hosts. It was such an amazing experience. But the Japanese speaking English, that's a fairy tale. Not many of them do. It just is not many of them, but they really helped. Yeah, but it wasn't just South Africans. They were friendly to everybody. Yeah. When I was in Yokohama, I was trying to make sure I got on the right train, and I was rushing. I'm dragging my suitcase behind me up the stairs because there's no elevator or escalator in that spot. And I get up there, and am I on the right platform? And it's just packed because it's rush hour on a business day. And I don't know. And so I'm looking around, and I'm starting to panic because I'm not sure. If I miss this train, I'm not, I'll get to the next place in time because I have to get on Shinkansen, the express train. Anyway, so I'm asking around, and nobody speaks English. And some guy comes over. He sees me distressed, and he says, and he asks me in Japanese. I says, I'm sorry, I don't speak Japanese. And he says, in French, do you speak French? And I'm like, parlez-vous français? I'm like, yeah, bien sûr, mais depuis longtemps. So a Japanese guy who spoke French, we spoke in French in Yokohama, and that's how I got on the correct train. So you got to love it. People really try.
Amazing.
It was really amazing. So let me ask you this. Who's the most interesting rugby player you've ever met through all the places you've been? I mean, you had to have had a chance to talk to some of these guys.
Yes, I must say Dwayne Vermeulen. He's actually, I'm not just saying because he's from my hometown, but he is from my hometown, and he's a very down to earth. It's between him and Zinzan Brook for the best 8 of all time, according to me. Nice. And he's so down to earth, powerful 8th man and loose forward. And then he's got a sense of humor and really, really a nice, nice guy, interesting guy. And you think all those forwards, they're not very smart, but they're not. They're very smart. I must say, Dwayne Vermeulen. Yeah.
No, I'd have to. I haven't met him, but I have to say he's amongst my favorite South African rugby players. Dwayne Vermeulen, I've been a fan ever since he came up, played for the Stormers and for Western Province. Huge fan of Dwayne Vermeulen. So, yeah, no, I think he's amazing. Yeah. He's great talent. And uninjured, he's clearly one of the best ever at that position, without a doubt. No doubt about it. So what's it like being right there at the Rugby World Cup? I mean, I can just imagine. I mean, I was in the stands, but being on the pitch that close when someone's jetting towards you for a try and they dive across and you've got a chance to take that perfect photograph, what's that like?
Yes, Chris. It's amazing. You still, when I see, I mean, the World Cup is about, well, was 10 months ago. Mm-hmm. And every time I see the replays, I can't realize, I can't emphasize how privileged I was to be there. You only realize how fantastic it was when you look at the highlights and stuff. You experience the bone tack, the bone crunching tackles. No matter if the crowd's cheering and stuff, you hear all the things. And
yep, looks like we got it frozen there. Hopefully the internet will come back in a second. Sorry about that, folks. What is with the internet in South Africa this week? It's a problem. Looks like we lost Johan there. Folks, you're listening to Chris White Africa. Hang on, Johan. Let me just do a quick introduction real quick. So yeah. you're listening to Chris White Africa on the Indaba Africa channel here on YouTube. And my guest today is Johan Orton, a professional sports photographer who's covered a lot of different events, including Curry Cup Finals, Super Rugby Final, and the Rugby World Cup, as well as the tennis match, the historic tennis match in Cape Town between Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal that took place not that long ago, just a few months ago. So what we're talking about, his experiences with rugby, and he was just answering a question a moment ago when we got disconnected a little bit. But before we continue, folks always know that I wear on this channel a rugby shirt or jersey every time I'm in the air. So this is my rugby jersey today, just so people can see it. It's U.S. Army rugby from West Point, the Black Knights. And so that's the jersey I'm wearing today.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I've got quite a collection of rugby jerseys. That's kind of my signature thing, is to wear them on my show. Hey, so let me ask you this, Johan. Behind you, I see a bunch of images. I'm going to guess those are your photos that have been published that are hanging on the wall behind you.
I'm just going to turn it. That's most of my images, front pages and stuff of the Springboks. And my wife said I must move it to the study room. But yeah, we still negotiate about that. Yeah, it's all my pictures I took photos of and got front pages or back pages of.
That's quite a nice collection. Yeah, I see you got Tendem Tawira there behind you. That's awesome. Yeah, and looks like the one that says news. Is that Makazole Mpipe? I can't tell. Looks like behind your shoulder there, next to Tendai.
Yeah. It's my pimpy. When he scored the World Cup try.
Yeah, that's.
There's the front page of the burger.
Okay, cool beans. Now, the reason I ask about the Mpimpe is that a little known fact. People don't know this, but you know, I was in the running for playing on the left wing for the Springboks, number 11 position, and somehow Makazole Mpipe beat me out. So, I mean, that's a little known secret here. You've probably seen my rugby jersey, my Springboks 2019 with Wyatt on the back in number 11. So, I just, you know, I'm kind of a little upset about that, but I'll get over it eventually.
Yeah, the speed of that guy is just amazing. And if you understand where he came from, and what he achieved eventually is an amazing story. I think he started playing rugby at standard grade six from a township, and he just climbed the ladders and eventually scored the first Rugby World Cup try by the Springboks in a final ever.
Yeah, finally, the third title. We have to wait forever. 95, 2007, no tries. Yeah. It took still 2019 to get a try, and then we got a couple of them, some really good ones too.
Yeah.
But let me get a few things in from the chat here. People are having a little fun in the chat. So Robin said a bit ago, she said, now I can't, there's one of the people who views my channel called Penny Williams, and Penny's on here. And I always have a crack because I'm a Big Bang Theory fan. And so I always pretend like I'm Sheldon and thank you, Penny. Anyway, but Penny. So now Robin says she can't look at Penny's name without thinking about the Big Bang Theory. And she's like, thanks, Chris. Anyway, you're welcome, Robin. And then, Winnie Vandemev, I think she's just having a go. She says, ask Johan if he has Sia Khaleesi's contact details. You need to get him on. That's because I did a video about Sia Khaleesi and cutting up your Springboks jersey. So she's having a go there. I don't think that's serious. But if you do have Sia's... If you do have his contact details, I'll be happy to take them.
Yes, I do have, but I'm not going to comment on any of those.
Smart move. Paulie says, Paulie likes my army rugby jersey. And then Winnie says, your jersey's better than the Western Province jersey. Winnie, that's the kind of language that gets you banned on this channel. You should be careful what you say. I'm just kidding.
I must agree with her.
Oh, that's not right. That's not right. So are you a Pumas fan? What's the deal?
No, I'm a Blue Bulls fan. And you know, the province and the Northerns fans, they had to go at each other all the time. It's the two most influential rugby teams in South Africa. No, the Bulls and the Stormers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, the Stormers are that Stormers. Western Province owned far more Curry Cups than any other team can even hope to approach. Just saying.
Yeah, but remember, the Northern Transvaal Rugby Union only was established in 1938. And since 1938, we won the most.
Yeah, but part of that's because we should share in full disclosure, people in that part of the country are a little slower and take some time to get going. So that's why. Now, for people who know...
I'll take it on the chin.
Yeah, you probably just move on from that. But people know me, know that I'm just having a go because my favorite part of the country is Pretoria. I actually love Pretoria. But I'm a Stormers fan through and through. But I go to Loftus and I enjoy watching Bulls games. Me and the other 600 people who bother to rock up for a game. It's really sad how empty the stadiums are these days.
Yeah, it is lately. In the past, before 1992... all the stadiums were packed, absolutely packed for just a normal Curry Cup match between, say, Northern Transvaal and Eastern Province. Mm-hmm. And, we were so, I think the professional era, people, the supporters, especially the Bull supporters, if the team's not performing, they will not support the team in the stadium. They must prove themselves. I know it's bad, but that's how the people in Pretoria are. And the Stutbuller ondersteuners.
Well, you've gained a fan here, Johan. So Winnie Vandemev says, Danke, Johan, Bulls die hard. And then she says, Johan, yes, my hero. and Winnie's telling me to be very careful. That's funny. Yeah, Stanley Robson says only WP won the Western Province won the Curry Cup a record 5 times in a row. I believe that's true. Yep.
So. Yeah, but they haven't won the big one, the Super Trophy, the Super Rugby Trophy.
The superly disappearing, rapidly dissolving Sanzar Super Rugby competition. We could talk about that. That's really disappointing. I'm really frustrated with Super Rugby and have been for a number of years. But Penny Williams, Penny just gave a super chat of 35 Ranch, says, Johan Orton, you must be a Western Province fan. And she's got exclamation points. So I'll say to Penny, thank you, Penny. Thank you, Penny. Anyway, yeah. So let's get back to not Super Rugby. We'll talk about Super Rugby in a little bit here, but I did want to ask you. So you use Canon cameras. Is that intentional? I mean, is that the best brand, or does it work best for you, or because they sponsor you, or how does that work?
Hi, Chris. It's like Mercedes Benz and BMW, Nikon and Canon. both are great brands. I think we, if you start with a Canon, you got to stick with Canon and your Canon equipment, lenses and your camera body. If you start with a Nikon, stick with it, because I think in the 80s, Nikon ruled the camera world, and then in the 90s, Canon took over, and then early 2000s, Nikon were at the top again, and now Canon is on the top again. So they both are great brands. I started with Canon, and eventually I stick with them, and I'm so glad I did. I'm an ambassador in South Africa for Canon as well.
Oh, cool.
So I get my equipment. I get my equipment for good prizes.
Nice. Tariffs. Professional discount.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Professional discount and stuff. The lenses is just amazingly sharp. So I'm a proud Canon man. But the technology changed so rapidly. I think in 2 to 3 years, mirrorless will be the next thing. I won't change to mirrorless yet. I'll give it about 2 to 3 years to sort out all the maybe if there's flaws. But at the moment, I'm using the Canon 1D X2 and the Canon 1D X3 Mark III. And my lens is a 400 f2.8 Mark II, and the 300 f2.8 Mark II, and obviously then I had some close-up lenses as well. But that's my sport lenses I use the most.
Yeah, so I don't recall, because you switched your mobile, I think. I don't know if you actually, you don't have the stream on or not, but I put on the screen a few minutes ago the caricature of myself in Toyota City from Shink Art. So I don't know, are you seeing that or no?
No, I don't see it. Okay. But I knew that picture. I know that picture of yours.
Yeah. So what I want to do, I want to mention that. So I have that courtesy of you, because you had your photo done, your character done from the Rugby World Cup by these guys. And I asked you where you got it done. You put me in touch with them and I got mine. And I absolutely love it. It's become kind of a trademark for my channel and for my streams. Whenever I do live interviews like this, you see that picture on there. And so do you know these guys there? How did you get in touch with them, and how did that come about? Because that's an awesome character of you.
Yeah, oh, thanks. Can I show you mine?
Yes, please. Please do.
Yeah, let me. Mine is also against the wall. And can you see it?
Almost. There it is. Yeah. Check that out, ladies and gentlemen. That is freaking awesome. Now, mine doesn't have that nifty World Cup thing on it. I'm kind of disappointed. I'm going to have to write to them and say, I want to redo. Mine doesn't have that.
they did one for all the Springboks. He's a South African guy. Mm-hmm. And I met him in, I think it was Tokyo, and he asked the media guys if they also want a picture. I said, yes, no question. And so he did it for free for us. And it's also, like you said, it's a classical WhatsApp profile pic you can use.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant for that. So I've stuck mine up on that. That was quite a signature event. Really cool. And I really appreciate that, Johan, because I'm really happy with the sketch they did on mine. You know, I like the fact that he put the, now, of course, I was never in Toyota City standing taller than the stadium with the Springbok flag, but every element of it is true. I had a Springbok flag. I had the Japanese kamikaze bandana on there, and that jersey and those shoes and everything. Although my head's a little larger than real life, but it's a character, so I guess that's okay.
I must admit, when I saw your image lately, I didn't recognize you. You didn't have the beard.
Oh yeah, this.
And the picture I took of you in the Toyota stands, you were quite, you had short hair. And one of my friends showed me the interview between you and Steve Hoffman. I said, no, that's not Chris. And he said, no, it is. And I looked, and eventually I saw, I recognized you.
Of course, leaving active service, you can't have facial hair and long hair and that sort of thing. So my hair actually was down to my shoulders here a few weeks ago. I finally had it cut. And I'm not so happy with the outcome, but it was down over the years and it was hanging off the sides. And I started the beard because just for giggles and grins. I wasn't going to do it for very long. And then lockdown happened. It's become my lockdown thing. And every time I talk about cutting off, people are like, no, don't cut it off. And people are like, don't you realize a lot of men can't grow beards like that? They're all envious and such. I'm like, really? I hadn't thought about it that way. I suppose it's okay. But yeah, so I'm...
Yeah, it looks good.
Well, people keep mistaking me for Paul Kruger. So, you know, it happens a lot now.
You just need an earring.
No earrings. That's not my bag. But there's a couple questions here, one of which I think is a very good question. Well, they're both good questions. I don't know if you want to answer the second one. But this question came from Sharon Westfall. And she says, and I think I know the answer already because I think you've already done this. But please ask Johan if he's considered putting his photos into a book with some anecdotes or memories of each game. I think you did one for the Rugby World Cup, or you're making one, correct?
Yes, I did one, a personal one. So I'm not allowed to sell it because there's royalties from the World Cup and SA Rugby and Toyota. Mm-hmm. But I've done one myself just for me and my family. But I'm willing to share it with them if they want to get in touch with me, and I can maybe sell it to them as well. But I'm not allowed to publish it.
No, you won't sell it to them. You just send it to them. They can cover the postage. Yeah. Cover the postage.
Yeah.
No, folks, you should do that. Listen, the details for Johan Orton are below the video down there. Links to his social media. You can check out what he does. His Facebook page and Twitter and all those other things are there. So check it out. And you can reach out to him if you're interested in a photo book. He sent me some images of when he's putting it together. It looks really awesome. And actually, I'm in the book, am I not?
Yes, you are. From the stands, yeah.
Yeah, just a little shameless self-promotion here in Chris White Africa. Don't pay any attention. So I've got to get my copy. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about that. But so the next question was, now this one, if you want to answer, that's fine. I don't really know how to answer this. But Anne Maria Forster asked this question a bit ago. She said she's curious to know how much one would get paid for a photo that gets published. My answer before you respond to that is that I imagine it depends on the type of photo, the type of event, and the type of news outlet that actually pays for it. So it probably varies between a little bit of money and a bonanza, depending on what kind of photo you take.
Yeah. Yeah, well, to give you an example, you remember the Rugby World Cup drop goal from Joel Stransky in 1995?
Of course. That was probably,
That image got about 250,000 rand. In those days, the rand was a little bit stronger against the dollar now, but that would probably be been, say, $50,000. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
$50,000 for a great image that had an influence on the game. So World Cup winning try or stuff like that is priceless. Yeah.
So along those lines, I mean, back in the day, it was all film. And you only had so much film, so you probably had to be pretty judicious about now you can just like take 1,000 photographs and look, did I get the right one? Does it make it easier with photography in some respects?
Yeah, definitely. Back in the days, you had to buy fast films and slower films. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't look at the LED screen at the back and to see, listen, am I on the right settings? Or nowadays, you can look, you put your settings, you sort of know all the settings. But, all right, it's too dark, you increase the ISO or put the speed down. So you can perfectly adjust all your settings just by looking at the screen. Mm-hmm. And in the film, you only had about 60 images on the film. So you had to know your stuff. You can't erase it. Okay, delete this one. So I must say photography has become so much easier for photojournalists. In the past also, the photographers, they only could attend half of the rugby match. Then they say, for instance, the game was in Durban. At halftime, they had to drive to Joburg to the printers, develop the photo, and that's what it was. And it wasn't near enough the quality of today's photos. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, my first digital camera, well, actually, before I say that, I should say that you were talking about Canon. I still have a Canon AE-1.
Oh, yeah.
That's a collector's item. At this stage, it has to be a collector's item. It's an antique. It's from the 80s. So, yeah, it's a brilliant camera. My first digital camera was a Casio, which I got in 1995. And it was like, 640 pixels or something like that. It took some really lame photographs. But I've always been an early adopter of things. And while digital cameras had already been out for several years for high-end professional photographers like yourself, they cost $25,000 in that time. Yeah. So me buying a camera for like $400 or $500, but today, I mean, my goodness, I mean, this thing right here is, you know, this could have launched the Apollo space program. And the photos it takes are just astounding. And this is a S9. Wait till the 20s, you know. Whew, man.
Yeah. I agree. Fully agree with you. The technology is just snowballing at the moment. And you don't know what you're going to get in 5 years' time. So, like I said, I'm sort of conservative. I'm just waiting for the mirrorless to get better before I'm making that change. But eventually I will change to mirrorless. Yeah.
So Anne-Marie Forster asked another question. She says, do you ever take nature photos? I think that's how you started initially. Do you still do that?
Yes. Nature photos, definitely. I do some landscapes. After varsity, after university, I went for a 2-year working holiday to the UK. And all the Scotland Highlands and beautiful scenery there got me hooked to landscapes again. And when I came back eventually, in I think it was 2005 or 6, I joined the photography club in my local town. And at that time, it was only landscapes, no sport. I love landscapes, and especially from this region near the Kruger National Park. I'm about 50 km from the Kruger National Park. And Chris, you have to come and visit me when you're even in South Africa, and I'll take you there. Anyway, so it's a sin not to take wildlife photos and landscapes if you're a Lowvelder, a Mpumalanga Lowvelder, if I can say it like that.
Yeah, I've famously never been to Kruger. It's one of the few places I haven't been in South Africa. Kruger, Eastern Cape, and Northern Cape are the three spots I haven't been to in South Africa. So I'll have to get around to it at some point. But with the British and Irish Lions series in Nelspruit, I have to look at the schedule again and see if it works, because it's not that far to get from Gauteng to Nelspruit. I mean, it's not that far a drive to do that.
That's
manageable.
About 3 hours.
I have to take a look at that and see if that's feasible. But, it would be pretty awesome, because I've never been in Nelspruit. I've just driven by it on my way to Maputo a couple of times. So it's not been a place I've actually stopped at. So I'd have to check it out. But let me ask this question. So the lockdown, this political hysteria that's caused this lockdown, I'm not talking about the virus, I'm talking about the lockdown itself and the way things have been handled. Yeah. No sports, no opportunity for you to raise any money or revenue by taking iconic photographs at sporting events. Do you do anything else? I mean, do you offer portrait services? Do you have a photo studio where if people want to get a family portrait or weddings or something, is that something you do, or you don't do that?
Yeah. Like I said, the last sport event I was shooting was the Federer and Nadal game tennis match in February. And since then, no professional sport events. But luckily, I'm involved with the local newspaper in Nelspruit, the Lowvelder. And I took some, they often call me to cover events. So like the food aid, what do you call it? The COVID-19. There's a charity organization in our region. So I had some photojournalist photos taking where food is handed out to the communities. So those money is coming in, and I'm also doing matric farewells. And photo shoots, family photo shoots. It's not my favorite images because I don't have, in Afrikaans they call it geduld. What do you say? Anyway, I haven't got the patience for for a bride or in wedding photography to say, yeah, stand like this, stand like that. I just want something to be nature and perfect in place.
I didn't hear your pronunciation, because in German it's Geduld. So it's similar to Afrikaans. So that's what you're saying. Patience. Geduld is in German.
Yeah.
So, Sharon Westfall said she just had a look at your Instagram, and she said you have a lovely pic of a lilac-breasted roller on your Instagram page. That's cool. Scratch your head trying to figure out.
Thank you so much.
It's like you scratch your head trying to figure out which photo was that. When did I take that photo?
Yeah.
So, are you always accredited for the Curry Cup? So will you be able to just go ahead and do the Curry Cup, or do you have to take some steps now, positive steps, to make sure that you're able to do this because of COVID?
Yeah, I'm affiliated with Rugby 365. You can go to their website as well. It's one of the largest rugby union websites in the world. And so I'm accredited with them. So I can go to all the stadiums and cover some rugby images for them. Yeah.
Okay, so when if Curry Cup, in fact, does get started in September, it's not going to be a problem for you to go to the Pumas game and cover it, or go to Loftus or something like that? Okay.
Yeah, well, it depends. If all the games is going to be in Cape Town, they will have one venue. That's the plan. Then it's going to be a problem because I have to, make sure I've got – I must use my own expense to get there. And obviously I'm full-time employed at the local private school in Nelspruit. Mm-hmm. So I can't just go for the weekend for the Friday to Cape Town and come back on Sunday. So, but if it's in Nelspruit or Pretoria, it depends on the COVID-19 regulations to move from province to province. But I don't think it will be a problem. I will get the right papers to do so.
All right, that's what I was curious about. So make sure we get that, because
we
won't be able to go to the games in the stands in September. That's for sure. There won't be any spectators. So we'll be counting on television coverage and sports photographers like yourself to bring the games to us, because we're not going to be able to be there, which kind of sucks. So Wendy Fundemeva was sharing with me. She's trying to help me out here. She said, Chris, Matrix Farewell is prom here. Thank you, Wendy. I actually know that. What I was going to say is that there's a significant difference, because prom is the big event that happens before graduation. And of course, here we require our students have a passing mark of 70 or above to be considered high school graduates. Of course, the ANC has lowered the standards to 30% in South Africa. So your matric is hardly a passing mark. I'm just saying, we welcome the new students to the engineering course here at UCT this year. How did you all do on your matrix? What was your math score since you're an engineering student? I got 32. Oh, welcome. You will make you the structural engineer for our bridges. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, man. Yes.
Just shaking my head.
Not anyway. A good CV for my country.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's really embarrassing. Instead of improving the quality of education, they're dumbing it down. And it's. But anyway, we don't get into that right now. So what are you looking forward to? What's the thing? Johan, what's on your events or calendar? Do you have anything that you're looking forward to? Are you excited about Curry Cup? Are you looking forward to test matches? Because we don't know what's going to happen with the rugby championship. The Springboks claim they're going to play. Sara says they're going to play, but it's in New Zealand. So obviously you're not going to go to that, I would imagine, correct?
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the Curry Cup, all this the local Super 12 or Super Rugby, like the Aotearoa matches in New Zealand. But I think it will be called the Curry Cup, because all eight teams will compete in it. But obviously the British and Irish Lions next year, I just hope it will take place. I believe it will. And not in closed stadiums, and I hope it all the spectators will be able to watch it. It's a great financial injection for our country to have all these British here in South Africa spending their pounds. So we need this these British and Irish lions do so much in South Africa. So that's I must say, if I look at the thing, I've never covered the British and Irish lions. I was in 2009. I wasn't involved with the Springboks yet, so this will be definitely one of my highlights.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like really interesting, but let me cover one last thing before we wrap up, if you don't mind, Johan. So we talked briefly about Super Rugby, and yes, I wanted to table that for a little bit later. So let me bring it back now. Let me give you my view on Super Rugby, and then I'll get your thoughts as a photographer who covers the game. So for me, Super Rugby, of course, came about as a competition in 1996 when professional rugby really started, the professional era. And it was a Super 12, and then it was a Super 14, and the Super 15, and then the Super Rugby 18. Yeah. And my thing is, I thought it was the best when it was 12 and 14 teams. That was when it was in its prime. When they expanded 15 and then 18 teams, it really diluted the talent. And we also saw the strange thing of conferences, and then teams didn't travel around. They stayed in their conference. So the South African sides never went to New Zealand anymore or Australia. And it was really weird for me. And I think they just played around with the league so often that they screwed it up. And now, of course, the New Zealand Rugby Union wants to disappear, and they want to go towards Japan and the U.S. and create their own Super Rugby. And then the teams in South Africa, of course, the Cheetahs and the Southern Kings were kicked out, along with the Western Force in Australia when they went back to 15. And so those guys went to play for Pro 14, which has been okay for the Cheetahs, not so great for the Southern Lions. But now we're looking at potentially South African sides going to compete in the Pro 14, which become the 15 or 16, or even maybe in the Premiership in the UK. So what are your thoughts about Super Rugby? Because it looks to me like it's over. It's done. We're not going to see it anymore.
Yeah. Actually, I can't say I'm glad, but I understand the principle of the because of the time zones and stuff. But like you said, rugby, Super Rugby, well, it started in 1993 with the Super 10, but only the professional leg of Super Rugby started in 1996, like you said.
Right.
And at that stage, it was a magnificent tournament. Yeah. I think it was also group matches. No, it was, everyone played everyone. Mm-hmm. So, but at first it was group games. I would suggest if Super Rugby want to become, wanted to be a great tournament, they also need a group A, B, C, like the Heineken Cup and the Rugby World Cup. Mm-hmm. Each team plays each other home and away, and then eventually a quarterfinal, semifinal, and a final. But it looks like the Sanzar committee only looks at their own pockets. They want it's too much rugby at the moment. 16 teams play each other on a weekly basis. In the beginning, you sort of really interested. You can't wait for the season to start, and then eventually by mid-season, you fed up with Super Rugby and you only watch the playoff games. Believe it, even a diehard South African rugby fan like myself, I get fed up with rugby, with Super Rugby. So I think the new, the new Northern Hemisphere, the move to the Northern Hemisphere would be a new challenge. And I would prefer if they also had group games like the previous Yana Cup, the European Cup. The time zones will definitely play in our favour. For New Zealand and Australia to tour each other, it's only a 5 hours flight. Mm-hmm. And for us, we have to travel from South Africa to New Zealand 14 hours, and then we have to stay there for at least five games. So it's 5 weeks away from home. Mm-hmm. And the Australia and New Zealand tours are at the most 3 weeks, and then they go back. And Australia and New Zealand's like provinces of it, are so close to each other. So it benefits them and definitely not us. So I think it will be a good move to go to the north.
for me. I think there's a lot of people agreeing with that. And to me, it's not sad to see Super Rugby go. Actually, I think they've ruined it. And so I want to be disappointed, but I'm not. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
So let me get one last question in here, because well, the Right Reverend Rawhide changed his avatar. Oh, shoot. This was Stanley Robson said, does Johan have a list of favorite pictures? And we talked about the photo book, but is maybe on your Instagram, are there any photos, are there anything where you put a spot and say, hey, check out these. These are some of my favorites. Do you have anything that on your media presence?
Yeah, I do. On my Facebook page. Okay. It's Johan Orton. It's called Johan Orton Photography. It's also you can also go in at Orton Media Photo, put in the search button at Orton Media Photo, and you will go to my portfolio pics, and there's all my favorite rugby pics. If you go to the portfolio album, but most of them are also on my Instagram and Twitter pages. But
all right, Johan, we're going to wrap up.
And but feel free to contact me for any advice. Okay.
Okay. No, I was going to say we're going to wrap up, but
I said feel free to contact me.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I say anyone, they can feel free to contact me for any advice. I'm willing to share my advice for them.
Sorry about that. Well, there's a slight delay between our connection for some reason. It's like you're in New Zealand, not South Africa. But I want to wrap up, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I mean, we've talked about COVID and the impact of that. Obviously, as a sports photographer, you can't be out taking pictures of sports. It's had an impact on your income. I've mentioned all of your social media links below the video down there where people can get to it. I asked you kind of about some of the other things you do. You talked about doing the Matrix farewells and stuff like that. But if anybody would like to reach out to Johan, go to his Facebook page, his other social media. And if there's any of his services that you can use, please check it out. But with that, Johan, is there anything you'd like to share with us as we close out the stream?
Yeah, Chris, I just would like to thank you for this opportunity to talk with you. And when we first met on LinkedIn, I never thought, we actually became friends. And we watched up each other on a regular basis. And it's really an honor to be called your friend. And I admire you. I can't believe you're such a Springbok fanatic fan. It really pleases my heart, yeah. And to all the South Africans worldwide, I just want to say to them, they must be positive, keep positive. Our country, we need lots of prayer, but I'm still positive of South Africa.
Excellent. Great thoughts, Johan. Thank you so much, Bye-bye Donkey, for your presence here today. I appreciate it. One thing I have to say before you go, though, is that, listen, I have a lot of SA rugby kit, but I don't have that jacket you have on right there. Ah, that must have been a team-only sort of thing. That is brilliant, man. That is brilliant. Look at that. Okay, I'm gonna talk to Johan offline about how I could get a hold of one of those things. But I'll ask him afterwards. But Johan, thank you very much. I really appreciate it having you on the channel today, folks. Check out Johan's links and check out his photography. The guy does a really, really good job. He's got a great eye for photographs, and I think you'll agree once you see his work. All right, Johan, thanks a lot. We'll catch you next time, and maybe we'll bring you back on the channel.
Thank you, Chris.
After the Currie Cup gets started, and talk about the experience of actually covering rugby in the midst of COVID-19. That might be an interesting topic for a future stream. What do you think?
Fantastic, Chris. We'll be on it.
All right, I'm gonna ask you to go into the waiting room. I'm gonna put you in the waiting room, and I'm gonna close out the stream here. All right, Johan, thanks a lot. See you later.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Whoops, I got to fix that. Now we're all over the place. Hang on, folks. Don't worry. I have not been sliced in two. that's just the way this thing is set up. Here we go. All right, there we go, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate those who are able to watch the stream today. I hope you found out some interesting things about sports photography and about Johan himself. Quite an interesting fellow. So done some amazing stuff, covered some really iconic rugby events, but he doesn't just do rugby. As we talked about, he's also done the Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal massive tennis match there in Cape Town recently. So folks, please check out all of his social media links just below here. If you're not a subscriber to Chris White Africa, I ask you to take a second and go, hey, why don't I subscribe? Smash that button right down there. It costs absolutely nothing. The introductory and permanent price of $0, zero rand, zero shekel, zero New Zealand dollars. Yep, that's right, folks. You can become a subscriber for absolutely nothing. If you are interested in supporting the channel, you can become a paid subscriber, and that costs almost nothing. You've created so people have a sense of community. And so the entry level for the three levels, but the entry level to become a member of Chris White Africa is just $1.99 US per month. Actually, that works out to 10 Rand in South Africa. So quite a bargain there, folks. Other folks charge you 60, 80, 100 Rand a month in South Africa for their coverage. I just offer membership for 10 Rand. It's a part of an effort to make a community, and you're welcome to join if you'd like. Anyway, so with that, I also ask that you smash the like button. I see we've down to 28 people because people are dropping off now that Johan has gone off and I'm less entertaining than Johan. But we got 51 likes. We had a peak audience, I think, of 43 on the channel today. That's not bad. Thank you all for tuning in for that. I'll be back for the Night Owls edition later today, and I'll talk about the purported assassination attempt of Donald Trump, which wasn't that, but there was a shooting incident outside the White House yesterday, which is making the news around the world today. We'll talk about Donald Trump. Also, I did take a look at the article from the Mail and Guardian, in which the Mail and Guardian talked about, they ran the story from Nick Turse claiming, you know, nefarious U.S. special operations activities all over Africa. Oh, Rambo in Africa. What a bunch of horse manure, ladies and gentlemen. And I've put on my channel under the community tab a link, which hopefully you got a notification about, showing a video that I did back in May disputing and debunking all of Nick Turse's claims about this. This guy is a conspiracy theorist who takes a little bit of genuine information and makes massive leaps across a chasm and tying things together that are unrelated and misleading the unknowing public that doesn't know better. And it's shameful. Anyway, so I have I'll probably do a video on this again because I find it very annoying. The person gives the impression that there are special forces doing operations in Botswana. No, there aren't. There are not. He calls the North Carolina National Guard special forces. He needs to get his facts straight. But anyway, he does take actual facts and he mixes them with his conjecture and weaves an interesting tale. But it's not the truth. And I will debunk that yet again. So folks, thanks for tuning in. I'll be back again for the Night Owls edition later today. That's at 9:35 South Africa time, Botswana time. So in about two hours and 20 minutes or there, or 2.5 hours, something like that, I'll be back on. And we'll chat about these events and about the situation with Donald Trump. Anyway, folks, thank you for tuning in. God bless. My special thanks to my guest today, Johan Orton, the professional sports photographer, a friend of mine from South Africa, who's from Nelspruit. Anyway, so we'll be back on later. Thank you so much. And we'll have Johan back on the channel at some point, ladies and gentlemen. So thank you so much for tuning in. I got to find my closing video here. Where is it at? Somehow it got in the wrong place. You know, you get the software here, you got to get in the right spot. All right, so I'm going to close out. I want to thank you all. Have a pleasant day. And hopefully I'll see some of you, if not more, in a couple of hours for the Night Owls edition of Stray Voltage.